I'm going to continue with what we did last week because I think it's important, even though I know it's technical, but I think that we should all have an idea, at least a basic idea, of what Torah is like in terms of the science of Torah, which is really, as you know, the Talmud. And this is, again, an excellent example because Torah was first taught in Egypt by Moses. And in this very first instruction of Torah, amazingly, we find practically all the formula or all the prototypes of the entire Torah in terms of commandments, positive and negative. And there are quite a few. Okay, now last week I spoke, I left off with the concept that there's a positive fulfillment. Two types of positive fulfillments. One is in terms of the person. That's like eating matzah, putting on phylacteries, or any other positive fulfillment. But then there's something else. There's a positive fulfillment in terms of an object. And over here, in eating the Paschal lamb, they were instructed that the Paschal lamb must be eaten for two reasons. First of all, each person, a personal fulfillment, like an ordinary commandment, but then also the objective of the lamb is that it should be eaten. So that's a positive commandment in terms of the object. Now this concept, and that's why I said that's where the violation of the one who is not, that's why a Ben Noach cannot eat the Paschal lamb. Not because he can't do the commandment that he can do. He can do any commandment. But over here, there's a restriction in terms of the fulfillment of the object, which is the objective of the Paschal lamb is to be consumed by a certain kind of person and a certain kind of person only. Now, there are several restrictions. One is that the person must belong to the system of the mandatory 613. He could either be a convert or a Jew. And also, as you know, he cannot be a person that was uncircumcised. Even if the person was uncircumcised, not due to their own fault. It doesn't mean because they're in violation of the commandment of circumcision. For instance, a hemophiliac, okay? That's one of the cases in the Talmud. A hemophiliac is not to be circumcised because, of course, it would cause the person's death and life comes first. But even the hemophiliac, who it's not his fault that he's not circumcised, nevertheless, he cannot partake of the Paschal lamb. And the reason is because the Paschal lamb must find its objective and fulfillment in being consumed by a certain kind of person, which is one who belongs to the mandatory system of 613, and one who has also the status of a circumcised individual. Okay? So that is the halachic reason. This concept of fulfillment, of an object finding its fulfillment, has many, there are many different examples. I'm just going to throw one at you. With regard to the altar, for instance, in the temple, so they would, many times they would bring...
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Gary Buchanan has a question before we proceed.
Go right
ahead. My question was pertaining to a person that was under the 613 laws.
Right.
That he could partake. But Abraham was not under the
613. Yeah, Abraham would not be able to partake of it.
Pardon?
Abraham would not be able to partake of the partake.
But yet he was circumcised.
Yes, that's right, but he wasn't under the mandatory 613.
So circumcision isn't the requirement. The 613 is the requirement.
Right, it's both. In other words, it has to be, first of all, 613, and secondly, circumcised. Must be both. Okay? So that's why the Paschal lamb didn't come to existence. And the Paschal lamb only...
Rabbi.
Yes.
Back, they didn't have the 613.
One second.
During the time of the Passover.
Excuse me a minute. I can't hear a thing.
Okay.
We are near the airport here, so just give me a second.
Okay.
So you didn't make your point.
Okay.
We there? Yeah, my point was the 613 were not given at the time of Passover. So why would that? Why was that a requirement?
Mm. Let me hear that again.
Was this?
Okay. The question is that at the first Pesach in Egypt, the 613 had not been given from Sinai.
That's right.
So how could the 613 be the prerequisite when the text in Exodus 12:43, I believe, says that no one circumcised shall eat? It didn't say no one that is, does not keep the 613 because it predates 613.
Okay. All right. That's a good question. The answer is that this was part of the entrance into the 613. The Jews entered the 613 through three methods. One is the circumcision. Two is the tevilah, going into a mikvah, submersion in a mikvah. And three is the Paschal lamb. So this Paschal lamb was part of the process that rendered them obligatory of the 613. That's why they were able to do that. Now, you understand that the laws in their inception are not necessarily the same as they are after the structure is completed, but they're related. So in other words, even though over here they hadn't completed becoming part of the 613, it was part of the process that made them part of the 613, and therefore it was permissible. Okay, but that's a good question. Okay, now there's an interesting question. It's a good question for Ben Noach, and that is, if a Ben Noach decides to eat of the Paschal lamb, is he in violation, or is the Ben Israel who gives him the Paschal lamb in violation? Okay, this is a good question. In other words, if you are Ben Noach and you are at a Seder in the time of the Third Temple, you personally, can you grab a piece of the Paschal lamb and eat it? Would you be in violation, or would the Jew be in violation, the Ben Israel, for giving it to you? He certainly would be in violation for giving it to you. There's no question about that. But the question is, what about the Ben Noach on his own, if he decides he wants to do it? So some say, no, he's not in violation. He's only obligated in seven. And this is not one of the seven. So they solve the problem simply. No, they say no, because it's not one of the seven. So therefore, the one who would be in violation would be the Ben Israel. Others, however, say no, the Ben Noach himself would be in violation. And their reasoning is as follows. They maintain that it is true that the Ben Noach has only seven laws that are obligatory. But that is, those laws are the laws that he's not allowed to violate. But there's something else also, and that is the reality of the halachic system. Now, the Ben Noach must recognize the reality of the halachic system just as much as the Ben Israel, because in terms of recognition, they're both the same. They both recognize the same God, the same Sinai, the same system, okay? The only difference is that one, it's mandatory, the other one, it's optional. But in terms of recognition of the system, they're equal. So therefore, that position maintains that the Ben Noach would be in violation, because here he knows that the object of the Paschal lamb can only find its fulfillment if it's consumed by a certain person. And since he or she is not that person, then they are breaking the halachic reality or the halachic objective of the Paschal lamb, and that would be a wrong thing to do. It wouldn't be as serious as the seven, but it still is wrong. It still would be considered a sin before God, because the Ben Noach would be, in fact, breaking the reality of the halachic system, which is, again, that the sacrifice should find its fulfillment through consumption by a certain person. Okay? Those are the two positions. I'm not going to go any further. I'll leave it to you. You can think about it yourselves. I'm not going to decide which one is right. That would be two scholarly positions. Now, here, there is something else also, and maybe you'll be able to explain why it is. In the entire Torah, in general, a person that's under bar mitzvah age, all right, means a person anywhere up to 13, is not included in any of the commandments, which means if they perform a commandment, it's not a real performance, If they violate a commandment, it's not a real violation. All right? That period up to 13 is a training period where it is obligatory on the parents to train the child, male or female, in the performance of the commandment. But that's something different than saying the child himself or herself is of halachic age. Therefore, it's something we don't tell the children, but if a child does violate a law, it's not really a violation of the law. They're not under the mandatory system of 613. Okay? So here we have a child that's not under the mandatory commandment of 613, yet, if you look in the Bible, it says, in chapter 12, it says that you shall take a lamb for each household. Okay, if you remember that? Now, if you take a lamb for each household, that would mean every person in the household is capable of eating. And that would include even one who is under bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah. All right? So here we have an exception. And the question is, how is it possible that in this one case, you can have a youngster eating, doing a mitzvah, doing a commandment, when we know in general there's no such thing as the performance of a commandment on the part of anyone that's under 13 years of age? Okay? Does everybody understand the question? Or I could ask the question differently. How is it, since the law is that you must be under the mandatory system, all right? So what is the difference between the child and between the ben Noach? They're both not under the mandatory system. So why do we say that the child, an 11-year-old, let's say, can eat of the Paschal lamb, whereas the ben Noach cannot? If the requirement is, as we said before, being under the mandatory 613, okay, so why is there a differentiation between the child and the ben Noach? We can ask the question that way. Or the other way. The question is, what's the difference between this commandment and every other one where a child is not considered as performing a commandment if they're under the age of 13? So how could they be included in this commandment? And that's pretty much an open verse in the Torah, because it says you should take a lamb for a whole household, which means everyone in the household, old, young, and otherwise. All right? What is the answer to this question? Anybody? Does anybody want to say? If you want to, I'll give you a chance. If not, I'll tell you myself, okay? All right, the answer is that the same thing as we've said before, that over here, with regard to the Paschal lamb, we have a different concept. The concept is that the lamb itself must attain its objective in being consumed by a certain person. That's when it obtains its objective. It will be similar. Like, for instance, with regard to slaughtering animals in general, in the temple. So after the animal is slaughtered, you're not finished with it, but you must take the animal and place it, the parts, on the altar. That means that the objective of the animal is to be on the altar. Okay, over here the objective is consumption. And other sacrifices also have as their objective consumption. Now the answer with regard to the youngster becomes clear. The way it works is like this. It's true that a youngster cannot perform a commandment. The performance is not considered valid because the youngster is not of age and has not reached the period where the mind, there's a supremacy of the mind over the emotions. That's reached at puberty, that's reached at bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah. Okay? So therefore they're not included in the 613. But the person of the youngster is the same kind of person as a person who is older than 13. There's no difference in terms of the person. There just is no obligation yet. Therefore, since the commandment with regard to the Paschal lamb is the reason why the Ben Israel has to eat it is because it must find its fulfillment in a certain person, it doesn't matter whether that person is underaged. As long as they are a kind of person that is under the 613. Now, a youngster is not a different kind of person because he is underage. He's the same kind of person. He just is in a different stage of life. So, therefore, the youngster does qualify in terms of fulfilling the objective of the eating of the Paschal lamb, because the objective is not dependent upon the stage of life of the person or the conditions of the person, just the type of person. And there is no difference in kind between a youngster and between a person who is over bar mitzvah, the same kind. The only thing is that the youngster is underaged and hasn't reached maturity. So therefore, insofar as the Paschal lamb is concerned, it makes no difference whether it's a youngster or not, because in terms of being finding its fulfillment, as long as it has the proper person, it does find its fulfillment. Whether that person is exempt from the commandments because they haven't reached the stage of puberty or not, it makes no difference. Whereas the Ben Noach is a different kind. The Ben Noach is an individual that is not under the system and will not be under the system at any time, unless, of course, they decide to convert, then they're changing their status. Okay? So one is a difference in kind, and the other is a difference not in kind, but it's a difference in quantity. In other words, under maturity or mature. That's not a difference in kind, okay? That's a quantitative difference. All right? Okay, that is the same, in other words, the same exact reason that we've explained before, namely that the Paschal lamb must find its fulfillment, is responsible for the exemption of the Ben Noach, and it's responsible for the inclusion even of the youngster as long as he is a Ben Israel. Okay? Now, I mentioned with regard to the altar also, that in the summertime they would bring sacrifices on the altar, and voluntary sacrifices. The reason is, I said, that the altar should not be empty. So therefore, you see, with regard to the altar as well, there is a concept not just that the altar is the place where you bring the sacrifice, but the altar finds its fulfillment as an instrument of the temple when it is used. So being used is a fulfillment. It gives the altar purpose. Again, that's a kind of fulfillment of the object. So that's why when there weren't many sacrifices, they would bring voluntary sacrifices on the altar, so that the altar should not be empty, so to speak, which means that it is devoid of activity, in which case it is not really attaining its objective and its purpose. So object. In the Torah, there is a halachic concept of an object having a purpose and a designation, just like the Paschal lamb has an objective. Okay? That's an important concept. That concept comes up many times. It's responsible for the fact that there's a seeming repetition in the Torah. Because in the end of Exodus, you have the same exact paragraph, almost word for word, as you have in Numbers. With regard to the daily sacrifices. And the question is, why the repetition? And the answer is because the end of Exodus is speaking about the tabernacle itself and the altar itself. And it's telling you that the daily sacrifices are a fulfillment in the altar. It gives the altar their objective. Then when it's repeated in Numbers, it's not referring to that aspect. It's not referring to the aspect of the altar finding its fulfillment. It's referring there to the responsibility of bringing sacrifices itself, which is a different concept. In other words, the performance of sacrifices. So the performance of sacrifices, again, is a double concept, conceptually a double kind of fulfillment. One is insofar as the altar itself, and two, insofar as the bringing of the sacrifices for the people. Okay? The area of sacrifices is one of the most conceptual areas of the Torah. And most of it is found in the verses themselves, if you study the verses carefully. Okay, now I'd like to move on to another example. Okay. There's a verse, again, in chapter 12, which tells you how to planes tonight are just unbearable. Okay. says, like, just give me 1 second. Yeah. Now, in verse 9, chapter 12, okay, it says, do not eat from it. Now, the word in Hebrew is gnaw. Gnaw means partially roasted. And the second one is, you must not eat of it if it's cooked. Okay, that's two. Two negative violations. Then it says, but only, you should only eat of it if it is roasted by the fire. And then it says, its head and its knees, it means the feet, and the innards. Okay? So the Talmud, of course, explains, obviously, the Torah tells you there's a special way to roast this animal. Okay? And the way was that they would take the legs and the innards and tie it to the lamb itself and roast it over the open fire, because that's what it says. That's exactly what it says in Exodus, how to do it. And when the Torah, when God gives instruction to do it this way, it is very precise. Now, this law of roasting it in that manner teaches us something if we reflect for a moment on the law itself. It teaches us a concept. Again, the whole approach of Torah is to understand the commandments in a logical, conceptual way. That's what the whole oral law is, okay? And nothing here is extra. There is not a word here that's unimportant. Now, what does this show us conceptually? It shows us an interesting thing. You see, the same verse teaches us two things about the same process. First of all, it tells us that you must eat it roasted. All right? So the way it's telling you the method of eating it. You must eat it after it's roasted. That's one. But then it says that you must roast the whole lamb together at one time. All right? The whole lamb with the innards and the legs and the head. Okay? All must be roasted at one time. What does this show us? It shows us that the roasting process comes under two frameworks. One framework, a means, a vehicle, a means of making the food edible. It must be eaten only in a certain way, and that's the roasting process. So the roasting process enables one to eat it. But there's another concept also, and that is the roasting process itself is a fulfillment. In other words, let's say a person knew they were not going to eat the lamb, okay? So would they have to roast it anyways? And the answer is yes, because since the Torah tells you how to roast it, a very precise method, it teaches you that this action of roasting is itself a fulfillment in the Paschal lamb. It's not just a means for eating, but it in itself serves a purpose. And it is a fulfillment in the lamb itself. So the moment you roast it, you fulfilled a quality in the lamb. Now this again, there are many laws that are structured in that way. I'll give you an example. The law is when one brings a sacrifice, they must lean on the animal. That means lean on the animal bodily, physically, with all their might, as it states in Leviticus. And that was the time when they, for instance, if it was a sin offering, they would recite, they would repent at that time. That was the time to repent. Okay? Now, that is also a fulfillment in the sacrifice. However, if you did not do that, it doesn't mean the sacrifice was nullified. Not every fulfillment, if you don't do that fulfillment, does it nullify the sacrifice. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You have to, that of course is dependent upon more extensive knowledge of the particular case. But I'm giving you an instance where it does not. In other words, if they did not lean on the sacrifice, it doesn't mean the sacrifice is no good. It just lacks a fulfillment. It is lacking. The object is lacking in terms of the sacrifice is incomplete. Nevertheless, it is valid. Certain things, if you do certain things, then you can invalidate the sacrifice. Okay, so there again you have that concept of a sacrifice being offered and certain activities done to it which are a fulfillment in the sacrifice. This is a good instance of that concept, that kind of an idea. All right? Now I'm going to move on to the next the next concept, which is a similar idea, and I don't believe I mentioned it. If I did, then stop me. But the Talmud states that the matzah and the maror must be eaten together with the Paschal lamb. Now, of course, again, the question arises, are those three, it says that you should eat the Paschal lamb together with matzah and with the bitter herbs, okay? It's the verse before, verse 8, and they shall eat the meat in that night, and then it says, roasted matzos with the bitter herbs shall they eat it. So here we have the eating of the Paschal lamb together with the matzah and with the bitter herbs. Now, the question is as follows. Are these three commandments or one? All right? Again, here you have an important conceptual structure. On the surface, you'd say they're three. Okay? So that means if I did not eat the bitter herbs, so I missed one commandment, I have two. But in truth, that's not the way the oral law interprets it. And the semantics of the verse is really in favor of the oral law's interpretation. Because it says, if you look at the verse carefully, it says, they shall eat the Paschal lamb on that night, the meat on that night, and then it says roasted flesh and matzos and bitter herbs shall they eat it. Why the repetition of shall they eat it? You see, there's no reason to repeat again and say they shall. You just said that they shall eat it. You should have just said they shall eat the meat on that night, and then it should say, roasted meat and matzah and maror, which is matzah and bitter herbs. But then it repeats that word again. It says, no, they shall eat it. So the oral law explains that extra word, and it explains as follows, that the bitter herbs and the matzah are not a separate commandment, but they are a commandment involving the Paschal lamb itself, which means that if you didn't eat the bitter herbs and the matzah, you didn't lack in the mitzvah, you didn't lack in the commandment of bitter herbs and matzah. Which commandment is not complete? Which commandment is lacking? The Paschal lamb is lacking. In other words, the matzah and the bitter herbs qualify the Paschal lamb. So if you're missing that, you're not missing the matzah, you're not missing the bitter herbs. What you are missing is you're missing the eating of the Paschal lamb in the proper manner. So the eating of the bitter herbs and the eating of the matzah is a fulfillment in what? In the Paschal lamb. To give you an example from a common day situation, that would be like if a person did not put salt on food that requires salting. So a chef would not say you're missing, you fail to eat salt. What is lacking is the food, because the salt is an enhancer of the food. So since it's a food enhancer, if you don't use salt, what you're lacking is the food. No one wants to eat the salt by itself. Okay, that's just I'm giving you a common day example of the concept. So sometimes you're missing the thing itself. If you're supposed to have a menu that has two objects on it, if you're missing the soup, and you're supposed to have a soup and a main course, so then if you're missing one, you only have half of you're missing the soup or you're missing the main course, whichever it may be. But if you're missing a condiment, it's not the condiment you're missing, it's the enhancement of the food. The food is lacking. It's not considered complete. That's the same concept that the Torah is expressing over here with regard to the matzah and with regard to the bitter herbs. That's why it says, you shall eat bitter herbs.
Okay, you may proceed.
Okay, thank you. Okay, my wife says I'm going too fast. I'm going to try to slow down a little bit. Okay, so the matzah and that's why it says you shall eat it, meaning if you don't have the matzah and you don't have the bitter herbs, you're not lacking in those things per se. You're lacking in the Paschal lamb. The Paschal lamb requires objects that enhance it. Okay? practical differences that result from the concept. One of them has to do with today, in eating with the way we have our Seder today. Now, our Seder today, of course, there's no Paschal Lamb. So then, of course, since there's no Paschal Lamb, so then there wouldn't be any purpose in eating matzah or eating the mara, right? Because since the only reason why you eat the matzah and the mara is because the Paschal Lamb demands a certain enhancement, okay, that's the reason, it stands to reason logically that if you don't have the Paschal Lamb anymore, there's no reason to eat the matzah or the bitter herbs, correct? So therefore, what one should ask immediately is that being the case, today there should be no reason to eat the matzah and the bitter herbs. Yet we know that today we do eat the matzah and the bitter herbs, and this, of course, presents a question. The Talmud discusses this question, and the Talmud explains that the bitter herbs really are not a Torah law anymore, because the bitter herbs, since there's no Paschal Lamb, so there's no enhancement of the Paschal Lamb, so the bitter herbs are not a Torah law. It was a rabbinical law. And that's why we do it. So it has a different status. Rabbinical laws is not of the same status as Torah laws. It's a different category completely. So that explains that. Now, of course, the question is, what about matzah? Is matzah today also only a rabbinical law, or is it a Torah law? So that is an argument. One position is that it follows the same course as the herbs. And just like by the herbs, since there's no Paschal Lamb, there is no herbs, according to the Torah. There is no matzah either, according to the Torah. And therefore, eating matzah today is only a rabbinical law. But it is not a Torah law. Okay? There is another position, however, and this is the one that we hold by, and that is that matzah is different. Why? Because in Deuteronomy, there is another verse that says, in the evening you shall eat matzos. So the verse in Deuteronomy singles out matzah and gives a special injunction, a special commandment, to eat matzah on that evening. So therefore, that the Talmud says that matzah comes under two headings. It is a commandment in its own right from Deuteronomy, and it is also an enhancement of the Paschal Lamb, a fulfillment in the Paschal Lamb. So now we have to just logically work it out. When we have the Paschal Lamb, naturally you have all three, okay? Today, we don't have the temple, we don't have the Paschal Lamb, so what do we have? We have no Paschal Lamb, we have no bitter herbs, but we still do have the matzah as a Torah law. Since the verse in Deuteronomy says, in the evening you shall eat matzos, and it singles matzah out, so matzah is in its own right a separate commandment, okay? So therefore, and that's the way the Talmud, that's the position that we go by, namely that matzah today is a Torah law, even though the bitter herbs is not, okay? So matzah, according to the Torah, has a double fulfillment, and that you have many times also, the concept of a double fulfillment, that there sometimes is one performance which can have two fulfillments, like in this case. The matzah is serving a double function. In its own right, it's a commandment, and it's also an enhancement in the Paschal Lamb. Okay? So you see how concepts can overlap. And then if you minus out the Paschal Lamb, so you're minusing out the matzah that's a fulfillment, you're minusing out the mora, the bitter herbs, totally, but you still can't minus out the commandment of eating the matzah in its own right. So that's why today we are left with one Torah law, namely eating matzah, and we're left with the bitter herbs only as a rabbinical injunction, but it is not a Torah law anymore until the third temple is rebuilt. Okay? So there again, you have a unique halachic structure. And as I said, I mean, this area is replete with halachic structures. Now we're going to get to something else. All right. There is a positive commandment, as we spoke last time, and of course there is a failure to fulfill a positive commandment. Whenever you have a positive commandment, you can fail to fulfill it, right? Okay. But here we have two types of failing to fulfill a positive commandment. All right? Let me give you an example. The Torah says that you shall not eat it, and that was, I believe, verse 9, 12, 9, you shall not eat it partially roasted or cooked in water. Okay? Now, what if a person eats it raw? Just plain raw. Okay? He's not involved in the violation of eating it partially roasted, because it's completely raw. He's not involved in the violation of eating it cooked, because it's not cooked. He just eats it raw. So we say this person failed to fulfill a positive commandment, because the positive commandment states that you shall eat it roasted. Okay? So he ate it, but he didn't eat it roasted. So he's failing in the positive commandment. Okay. But now, that is different than not eating the Paschal lamb altogether, for instance. All right? Let's say a person just does not eat the Paschal lamb. Okay? Now, what is the difference, or a person does not eat matzah? Okay? What is the difference between not eating matzah and eating the Paschal lamb in the totally raw state? Okay? So, the answer is as follows. It's similar to what we said before. Let's say a person eats the Paschal lamb, he eats a piece of the Paschal lamb raw, okay? He has a big lamb, and he has, let's say, two measures of lamb in front of him that qualify for the commandment. One measure he eats raw, and one measure he eats roasted. Is he in violation or not? Okay? So you'll say like this. Insofar as eating the Paschal lamb, he ate a measure of the Paschal lamb, which is about the size of a shot glass, about an ounce. So he ate that ounce, size of an olive. He ate that, so he fulfilled his commandment. On the other hand, we say he really negated a commandment. But why? He did eat it. So the answer is there are two types of negating of a positive commandment. One is in terms of the person, the personal performance, and one is in terms of the object. In other words, if the object demands that it be eaten roasted and you fail to eat it roasted, so you are failing in the fulfillment insofar as the object is concerned. Again, over here we differentiate, and this differentiation is a really a major one in the Talmud. You almost can't move without this differentiation. And that is the fulfillment of the person and the fulfillment in terms of the object. So if the person ate a measure of roasted lamb, then he fulfilled his commandment in terms of the person, the performance. However, if he ate another measure that was not roasted, he failed to fulfill the commandment in terms of the object, because the object must be eaten in the roasted state. So the object is suffering in terms, and halachically, it is not being fulfilled in its proper manner. So not fulfilling a positive commandment has two forms to it. One, person, and two, in terms of the object itself. Again, another important halachic formula. Okay, now, let me give you a negative commandment. And what I'd like to show again is that a negative commandment, okay, can also be in terms of the object, or it could be in terms of the person. Okay? Let's take two negative commandments and compare them. One negative commandment is not to eat the Paschal lamb, let's say, cooked. Okay? So the person who cooked the Paschal lamb, he is in violation of a negative commandment. Okay? Negative. Now, I'll take another case where it says you shall not leave the Paschal lamb over until morning. All right? So that also is a negative commandment. But conceptually, in terms of thought processes, there is a difference between these two formula. And the difference is as follows. In one case, the negative commandment involves performance, which means you shall not eat it cooked. So if you eat it cooked, that is a negative performance. The other one is a negative performance in terms of the object, which is don't leave the Paschal lamb over until morning. That is not a performance. As a matter of fact, you didn't even do anything. All you did was you just left it not eaten until the morning. That's a negative commandment in terms of the object. Okay? So you have positive commandments that break up in terms of the person and the object. And again, you have the same phenomenon with regard to negative commandments as well. Okay. What I'd like to take now is, this is, if you followed me so far, okay, I realize it's complex, but I think it is important to at least see what, you know, some of the basic halachic structures that emerge from the Torah. And it gives you an insight into what the Talmud is doing in explaining these verses, okay? I'm going to raise a question. This is a little bit advanced. But I'm going to do it anyways, all right? Now, we're going to compare two cases, all right? Now, one case we took already. If the person eats the Paschal lamb raw, so we say he failed to fulfill the commandment, the positive commandment of eating it roasted, okay? The Torah says, eat it roasted. He did not do that. He failed to fulfill the positive commandment. That's case A. Okay. Now I'm going to give you another case. The Torah says they should eat the meat on that night. All right? Okay. Now let's say the person roasted it, did everything fine and wonderful. However, what the person did was they ate it in the daytime before nightfall. All right? Now, if you remember last week, I told you that positive commandments break up into two types, all right? Another distinction. There are positive commandments where you fail to accomplish something, and then there are positive commandments where you are in violation of something. In other words, a positive commandment to put on phylacteries or to pick up a lulav, pick up the four species, if you don't do that, you failed in terms of fulfilling a commandment. Okay, is that clear? However, the positive commandment of sending away the bird from the nest, if you don't do it, it's fine. You didn't fail. You don't have to climb the tree and chase the bird away. Okay? However, if you did not chase the bird away, and you climbed the tree and you took the bird and the eggs, you are in violation. So sometimes a positive commandment is a violation. Again, where the Torah says, these are the animals you shall eat. If you eat something other, you're in violation of a positive commandment, because the commandment is eat only these, not those. All right? So sometimes a positive commandment is a fulfillment, like the first case, like the case of taking the four species, sometimes, or building a sukkah, most of the commandments. Sometimes it's a violation. That's not the general case, but there are many cases like that, like the case of eating the animals that are non-kosher. It's not just a negative violation, it's also a failure in terms of a positive. That's a restrictive positive. Okay? That's how I would describe it. Now, let's go back to our case again. Case A and case B. Case A is where you fail to eat it roasted. All right? Now, let's ask. If you fail to eat it roasted, is it a kind of commandment like picking up the four species, taking the four species, building a sukkah? Or is it a kind of commandment like eating a non-kosher animal if you don't eat it roasted? All right? You follow the question? The question is, which kind of positive commandment, which kind of positive commandment is this? How did I fail? Did I fail like I did not do something positive? Or did I fail because I did something wrong? Like if I didn't eat the kosher animal, ate a non-kosher, I failed because I did something wrong, not just that I failed to do something right. Because there's nothing right, really, in eating a kosher animal, as I explained last week. There's no reason to eat a kosher animal. You don't want to eat, you want to eat vegetables, that's fine. Okay? Whereas picking up the four species, it's not optional. There, you must pick up the four species. There is a positive fulfillment. Now let's take these two cases, all right? The case where you have to eat it roasted, obviously, is that, which one is that? Is that like the four species, or is that like eating a non-kosher animal? And the answer is, it's like the four species. Okay? Because over here, it's a positive concept. You're supposed to, the roasting is a positive element added to the eating. All right? So if you ate it not roasted, you ate it, but you're missing a component. So you fail to fulfill a positive mitzvah, positive commandment. Hold on 1 second, I got to place again. Now let us take case B. Case B is you did everything right, but you ate it before nightfall. The Torah says you must eat it on that night. So the Paschal lamb can only be eaten at night. Now what would you say in that case, if I ate it in the daytime? Did I fail in a terms of a positive? In other words, I failed to fulfill the quality of nightfall. I did it, but I didn't do it in the, I'm missing a component, just like I'm missing a component of broiling if I eat it raw. Okay? Is that what it is? Or no, is this really a violation? Not just I'm failing, I'm doing something wrong because the Torah restricted me to nightfall, said eat it at nighttime, which means nighttime means not in the daytime. Okay? Then it would be just like the other commandment of eat only kosher animals, don't eat non-kosher. Eat it only at night. Do not eat it in the daytime. All right? Or do I say no? That over here, it's just like the broiled meat. Eat it at nighttime. So if you eat it at nighttime, you did two things good. You ate it, and you ate it in the right time. You didn't eat it at nighttime, you ate it, but you're missing the time element. All right? Logically, there are two ways to construe this. I can't prove either way. On the surface, with the information we have, there is no way to prove which one of the two structures this is. If I eat it in the daytime, did I fail and I lack the element, the time element? Or no? If I ate it in the daytime, I am in serious violation because the Torah said only at night, not by day. Just like the Torah says, eat only the kosher animal, don't eat the non-kosher. It could be logically the structure could be either or. The Talmud, however, decides that it is not the first way, it's the second way. Namely, if you eat it in the daytime, it is not just you failed to give the eating the proper qualitative element of time, but you're in violation. Because here, when it says eat it at night, it means eat it only at night, not in the daytime. And the question is, why does the Talmud favor this position? Why doesn't the Talmud equate the two, the eating of the meat raw, not roasted, together with the eating it at nighttime? It's logical to say they're both identical, especially they're both relating to the same commandment. All right? Okay. The answer to this question is based on a, well, let's say, for instance, you failed to eat the matzah. Okay? You failed to eat the matzah. You failed to do a positive commandment. Same thing over here. Why don't I say I failed to eat it at nighttime? I failed to do the positive commandment of eating it at nighttime. Okay. The answer has to do with the concept of sacrifices. All right? See, that's why when you study the Talmud, you have to remember that you have to have all areas. That's why it's so difficult to study Talmud, because the Talmud wasn't written didactically. It wasn't written to teach people. These were discussions among great scholars, and they had the whole Torah in their minds. Whenever they discussed one topic, every other topic was known to them. So many times that people come into a Talmudic, they take a little piece of the Talmud, but they don't understand it because they don't have the knowledge from the other areas. You have to have every single piece of Talmud in your mind at one time before you can study any one piece. Okay? So this requires knowledge from the area of sacrifices, but not complex knowledge, just simple fact. All right. The sacrifices, many sacrifices, as you know, if you read Leviticus, many sacrifices are consumed, are eaten. All right. So now the sacrifices. There are two time. There are two time schedules in the Torah for eating sacrifices. One is a day and a night. Some sacrifices may be eaten. It's a sacrifice in the daytime, let's say. You could eat it that day, and you could eat it that night. Another sacrifice, for instance, the peace offering, shlomim, there you can eat it for 2 days and one night, which means if the sacrifice takes place on Monday, you could eat it Monday, Monday night, and Tuesday. But that's it. After that, it cannot be consumed. It's not supposed to be in existence, and if it is, then you have to burn it. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that every single sacrifice that is eaten, the type of sacrifice that is eaten, Passover, the Paschal lamb, is that type. The moment of eating is determined by the moment of slaughtering. In other words, the moment you slaughter the animal, so then what happens is now it's subject to be eaten. Okay? The exception is the Paschal lamb. All right? The Paschal lamb is the only one that cannot be eaten immediately after the sacrifice is actually performed. Once the shechita is done, the proper method of slaughtering the animal is done, you cannot eat it at that point. You must wait till nightfall. Now, you see, why is that so? The reason that is so is not because the Paschal lamb is different. It's just like every other sacrifice that's supposed to be eaten, and therefore the moment that the sacrifice takes place, that initiates the time period of eating. So really the Torah didn't have to tell you that you could eat it at nighttime, because the moment you sacrifice it, it can be eaten from that point on until the next morning. All right? It's one of those types that can be eaten from the daytime until the next morning, a day and a night. Since that's the case, in other words, what initiates the eating process is the sacrifice. Since that is the case, the Paschal lamb, the moment it's sacrificed, it initiates the eating process. You don't need the Torah to tell you to eat it, you see, because you can't eat it the moment it's the moment the sacrifice, the slaughtering takes place. Therefore, when the Torah says you should eat the meat in that night, it is a restrictive statement. It's telling you the initiation really took place, like it does always, and therefore you should be able to eat it for a day and a night. But now the Torah says, but here, no, don't eat it that night only. So the eating of that night is not giving a time element. The time element really is contained in the slaughtering. But when it says to eat it at night, it's a restrictive statement. It's saying, eat it only at night. Don't eat it like every other sacrifice in the daytime. So there is a difference between the initiation of the eating process in the case of the Paschal lamb as opposed to eating matzah, for instance. The eating of matzah, the time element, is essential. The Torah says, do the mitzvah, eat the matzah. When? It must tell you, in the evening. Okay? Over here, there would be no necessity to. The time schedule has really been prearranged from the moment of sacrifice, like in every other case. When the Torah says eat it at night, it's telling you don't start the process like you ordinarily would do in every other sacrifice, but wait till nightfall. Because the Torah wanted the Paschal lamb to be eaten at nighttime together with the matzah and the morah, as we said before. The only way the Torah could do it would be to limit this sacrifice, place a limitation on it, which does not exist in any other sacrifice. So therefore, the time element is a restrictive concept rather than a true positive concept like the case of the roasting the meat. There it's a true positive. Roasting is a true positive quality that you're adding to the meat. Over here you're not adding a time element. The time element was already established. In the time of slaughtering, the time element was established for that day and that night. Now, you have to restrict the day in order that it should only be eaten at nighttime. And since that is the case, the knowledge that we have from sacrifices in general reflects on the Paschal lamb And therefore, if a person eats it in the daytime, it's not simply he failed to do something. He is in violation. He is actually doing an action which is defined as a prohibited action because the Torah has restricted that eating to the nighttime. Okay? I know it's very complex, but I figure if someone who will take the time and the effort, I think it will be worthwhile because they'll be able to see the beauty of the structure. Okay. Now, let me just give me 1 second here. Are there any questions, by the way?
I don't think we have any.
Okay, I'll just finish off with one more point, okay?
All right, we have less than 3 minutes.
Okay. Now, the last one, okay? This is the last one. The last one is as follows. If a person eats it, now here's another question again. If a person eats the Paschal lamb, let's say he cooks it, okay? That's an open violation of Torah. Do not cook it, all right? Do not eat it cooked. Now my question is this. Is that considered a violation of action, like not eating pig, let's say? Or is that considered a violation of the object that, like we said before, that you're not allowed to violate the object by eating it in the wrong way? Okay? That's a good theoretical question. The answer to that one is that it's a violation of action, not of object. And the proof is that the violation of eating it semi-cooked or eating it cooked is only at nighttime. All right? The Talmud derives that violation is only at nighttime. Now, if it were a violation which is in terms of the object, in other words, you're violating the object, it wouldn't make any difference if it were day or night. Because in terms of the violation of the object, what difference does it make when you do it? You're violating the object by not eating it in the proper way. The fact that it's restricted to nightfall shows that that is a special kind of violation, that at the time of the Paschal lamb, at the time that it should be eaten, it must not be eaten either semi-roasted or else cooked. Okay. Now, it's important to know what the Torah says, not just in terms of understanding the halacha, which is essentially very important, but also in terms of philosophy. Because,
Rabbi,
yes.
We're almost out of time.
Okay. All right. The only time you can have a sound philosophy is if it's built on the proper facts. And the halachic structure is the system which gives you the facts. Okay. I think
we'll stop on that fact.
Okay.
All right.